In 2004, UPI journalist Dan Olmsted visited the Amish community in search of autistic children. While among the Amish, he discovered a very interesting anomaly. Whereas the rate of autism in the general population is one child in 166, the rate among the Amish appeared to be only one in 15,000. This Amish anomaly leads us to ask, why do we have 90 times more autism than the Amish?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 662nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends perched in the little town of Ez who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hi.
Producers Carol Stafford and Kelsey Olson are out on mom missions today. Folks, autism is a disorder of the brain that is characterized by impaired social interaction and communication and by restrictive and repetitive behavior. That much we know. Much of the rest we do not know. In 2004 or 5, somewhere in there, journalist Dan Olmsted wrote an article for United Press International that began as follows. Where are the autistic Amish? Here in Lancaster County, heart of the Pennsylvania Dutch country, there should be well over 100 with some form of the disorder. I have come here to find them, but so far my mission has failed. And the very few I have identified raise some very interesting questions about some widely held views on autism. The mainstream scientific consensus says autism is a complex genetic disorder, one that has been around for millennia at roughly the same prevalence. That prevalence is now considered to be one in every 166 children born in the United States. Applying that model to Lancaster County, there ought to be 130 Amish men, women, and children here with autism spectrum disorder. But Olmsted could not find the autistic Amish. In fact, he was only able to document one full-blown case of autism among 15,000 Amish. And so today we ask, why the Amish autism anomaly? Why do we in the general population appear to have 90 times more autism than the Amish? Here to help us look for answers today, we have that intrepid journalist that went traipsing through Amish country, Dan Olmsted. Dan, welcome aboard.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So what on earth possessed you to go looking for autism in the Amish population as a UPI reporter?
Well, I sort of got interested in autism because I had been working on a story about prescription drugs and side effects and had kind of been hearing some parents say that they felt that, at least in their own child's case, the autism had come on shortly after they'd gotten some vaccinations. And so it seemed to me the first question to ask is, what is the autism rate among American kids who've been vaccinated versus kids who haven't been vaccinated? Because that would give you a pretty quick snapshot. It wouldn't, you know, be proof. Mm-hmm. But so I asked that question of a number of people who are more familiar with it than I, and they said, well, no one has ever studied that. And they've never looked at what is the health outcomes.
But that's kind of interesting, don't you think? Because that's one of the scientific method is that you, when you do conduct an experiment, you have a control group.
Well, I thought so. There's a lot of explanations given for why that can't be done. It's unethical to withhold vaccinations.
Oh, okay.
There aren't enough kids who haven't been vaccinated. There could be other factors at work, like diet, that sort of thing. But I still thought it was a good question. And so
I like the question.
Yeah, yeah. And so answering questions is kind of one thing journalists try to do, or mm-hmm. at least propose answers. And so I live in just outside of Washington, D.C., and Amish country, Lancaster County, is just a couple of hours north. So I just went up there and started asking questions. And you know, I want to emphasize that that is very anecdotal and not certainly, you know, I'm not a scientist, I'm not an epidemiologist. But as you read from my article, I, you know, to the extent that I my mission was to find, you know, any significant number of Amish folks with autism. I really failed. You know, and since then people have said, well, you missed this group, you missed that group. But I still, you know, it's 5 years later and I still haven't seen much evidence of Amish people with autism, except for the ones that I actually found myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you a couple questions with respect to asking the Amish questions. I've done a number of radio shows about them, and it's always impossible to get them to appear on the radio themselves. It has to be a former Amish or a neighbor of an Amish or something to that extent. Now, when you went up to Pennsylvania Dutch country, did the Amish people actually talk to you, you being in the English as they refer to outsiders?
Well, they did. I sort of worked my way in from the outside. I started talking to an Amish Mennonite family that had adopted a little girl from China who was autistic, and they believed it had a vaccine reaction. And they told me about some full-fledged Amish folks. One child had a vaccine reaction, they said. And then I talked to some of the doctors who treat the Amish in Lancaster County, and those are non-Amish doctors. And one of them told me, boy, he said, I never even thought about it, but now that you ask me, I've treated thousands of Amish families for 25 years, and I've never seen a case. And then finally, I did connect with a woman who introduced me straight into the Amish world, and I sat in their kitchens, and, you know, they cut asparagus from their gardens and gave it to me to take home. And so by the end of it, I was pretty plugged in. And through that method, I actually did find one child with autism that I actually met, a 9-year-old girl, who had been taken away from her family when she was 2 because the health authorities didn't like the way they were treating an ear infection that the child had. And when she was taken away, she was fully vaccinated, and when she came back a year later, she had autism. So I may be the only one who's actually found a child in the Amish community with autism. And then I took her picture, and I ran her picture on our website, Age of Autism. And so, you know, I've tried to be pretty transparent about my methods, such as they are, and what I've found, and what I, you know, continue to learn. And that's kind of where I am with it.
So you wrote this UPI piece, you know, called The Age of Autism. And what was the reaction to that? I mean, that's a pretty profound observation that the Amish don't have autism. Whereas in the general population, we have 1 in 166, which is like a plague almost, isn't it?
It is a plague, Michael. Well, I'd say there were two kinds of reactions. One were, you know, I might use the word nullification, where people said, well, I just didn't look in the right places. Here are some, you missed them. You know, you're just a journalist and you're biased and that sort of thing. And you know, I take that to heart, and I try to say that I'm just doing my best, and if anybody else can add to the information or find them, you know, God bless them. But the other thing is that it did stir interest in the autism community to look at this more scientifically. And in fact, Carolyn Maloney, a United States representative from New York, has introduced a bill in Congress to force the federal government to study the autism rate and other issues in vaccinated versus unvaccinated Americans, not necessarily the Amish, but to do it in general. And that's been languishing in Congress for 2 or 3 years now, but it's sitting there. An official of our government has tried to get that done and can't. So there's resistance to it.
Okay. With respect to, I mean, if there are 101 out of 166 of us, that equates to quite a food chain, does it not? I mean,
yes, and you know, even since I wrote that, it went down to 1 in 150, and then 1 in 100, and now 1 in 91.
Are you kidding?
No, 1 in 58 boys.
1 in 58 boys have autism?
Yeah. Now, that's a spectrum, remember, and so you get some children who are functioning pretty well and have just, you know, slight disabilities and differences, but then you get, you know, profound autism is terrible. It's a complete inability to connect with the rest of the world and, you know, to be able to fend for yourself and to communicate. It's awful. So,
do we know what it is, what autism is?
Well,
wait a minute. Before we go there, let me follow up here quickly because we're going to have to take a break. So after you put this article out in UPI, you kind of became a crusader.
Well, that's... Crusader, and yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I I came to feel, based on my own reporting, that this issue was not being taken seriously, and that we could figure this out if we wanted to. And so I did. I did become
the Lawrence of Arabia of autism.
Lawrence of, yeah. Well,
something like that.
That sounds a little glamorous, but I'll take it.
Okay, folks, you're tuned into the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here. This is issue number 662 of the Food Chain. Today we're talking about autism. We're talking about why there does not appear to be a lot of autism in the Amish community, whereas in the general population of you and I, autism rates are up to 1 in 58 for the boys, and probably a little less for the girls, but that is a plague. What on earth is going on? Why do we have so much and they have so little? What are we doing that they're not doing? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back with Dan Olmstead.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, that's an interesting anomaly, folks. Whereas in the general population, the rate of autism is 1 in, what Dan said, 58? Holy smokes.
Oh, yeah.
And yet in the Amish community, 1 in 15,000. That is a statistical anomaly. It's just a fact, that a figure that just pops out and says, why me? Well, why? What on earth is going on? Why do we have so much autism? Why do the Amish have so little? We're talking with Dan Olmstead, who Dan is the editor of theageofautism.com. Dan was a journalist for UPI. He got picked up on the story and got carried away, and he became kind of like the Lawrence of Arabia of autism. And so we're talking with him today. Dan, when you came out with your article, you stirred up quite a hornet's nest.
Well, I did, because, you know, the mainstream opinion about autism for a long time has been that it's genetic, that there's something going on in the way the parents pass down genes that combine in a certain way.
So autism is something that one catches or is afflicted with in the womb.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
You don't get it walking down the street.
You don't. And therefore, that would mean that it's essentially been at the same prevalence for a long time, because genetic changes just don't occur that rapidly. And yet, the numbers, as you've been saying, keep going up so dramatically that a lot of us have really kind of concluded that it's just not a genetic thing, that it is environmental, that autism is somehow man-made. There's something that we're doing through our environment, through medical interventions, through toxins of some kind, perhaps interacting with viruses. Something's going on here that we should be trying very hard to figure out, because it's really, you know, affecting, I mean, we talk about kids, those are future adults, it's the future of our planet. It's a very important issue.
Well, it seems perfectly reasonable that we would start asking these questions, and yet when you started asking these questions, a lot of people started jumping up and down and saying, no, 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 you're absolutely wrong. The Amish are a lot more Amish have autism than you're saying, and some of them are getting vaccines and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
How do you respond to all those critics?
Well, I mean,
of which you have many, by the way. They're out there.
That's right, and that's fair. That's the way the game is played, and free press, free expression. I would say that I don't think anybody has been able to locate Amish with autism in the numbers that we would expect them. And I also think it's pretty clear that even though some Amish children are vaccinated to some extent, it's not at the rate that we're seeing currently among mainstream kids. You know, you get a vaccine on the day of birth for hepatitis B, which is not a disease that really threatens children. You get a chickenpox shot and the MMR at the age of one. There's just lots and lots of shots, and I don't see the Amish getting shots on the day of birth, frankly, because a lot of them are born at home. I think that there's an issue there. I think you have to wonder about the diet and the kinds of materials and substances that the Amish
eat with. Well, you know, well, there are a lot of things that we do that the Amish don't do, and vice versa.
That's right. So, and, my only point has been let's see if we can't figure that out, because whatever combination of factors is going on, we want what the Amish have, which is little to no
which
autism.
Is no autism, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So just as a side, do you feel like a global warming denier, whereas you're standing up and saying one thing and the entire scientific world is standing up and saying, no, you're wrong?
Yeah, in a way I do, but I'll tell you, Michael, and you may know this from a lot of issues that you're involved in, right beneath the surface are a lot of smart people, including some scientists, who are looking very hard at what's going on with autism and concluding that it is environmental and that we really can't rule out the role of mm-hmm. vaccines, even though the government has said that's already been asked and answered. So I'm not totally isolated, but this issue is really a paradigm war. I feel like I'm part of the Rebel Alliance in the Matrix or something.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Kind of fun in a way.
Which, for a journalist, what could be more fun than tilting at the biggest windmills in the world? Yeah.
Exactly.
So, in essence, then autism is a genetic problem, or an environmental problem, or maybe one of a little bit of both. Is that possible?
Exactly. I think what you just said is right. I think that there are vulnerable kids, and they may be vulnerable because they were sick at the time they got a vaccine, or they may be vulnerable because they have a hard time detoxifying heavy metals that maybe they get from living near a coal-fired plant that's mm-hmm. spewing out lead and arsenic and mercury and all that stuff. So there's some interaction going on, because otherwise everybody would have autism, and thank God that's not the case. So it's a susceptibility and a trigger, I think.
I want to ask you a probably real dangerous question that was kind of thrown my way. Yesterday I received a call from a fellow who lives in the Midwest and buys hay from uh-huh. Amish neighbors.
Yeah.
And, when he got the press release for this radio show, he called up and because, I don't know why he called up, but he was very interested in this whole notion of the lack of autism in the Amish, because that's what he notices. He says that they're all very healthy
mm-hmm.
and they're all physically very strong and they're all good workers.
Yeah.
And he suggested that they joke among themselves that the weak are sometimes like taken out behind the woodshed or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that?
No, I have not.
Okay.
The Amish have a lot of genetic problems because they're, a closed society and
mm-hmm.
they, are related and more closely than most of the people who get married in wider world. So I've definitely seen Amish folks with some serious genetic problems. I don't think that they're spared, the common life. But I think the observation that they are generally pretty darn robust and healthy and don't seem to be dying in great swaths because they haven't gotten the chickenpox vaccine, that's true.
Hmm. And to what do you attribute all of this healthiness? I mean, you travel among the Amish, and they're all looking really good, And what do you attribute that?
Well, I think we should do a study and look at vaccines first, and then try to rule that out. In other words, a lot of parents of kids with autism think it is the vaccine, the Amish seem to get fewer vaccines. Let's check it out, and if that's not right, let's be done with that.
Okay. So you're taking on a huge industry.
Yeah.
I mean, how much money do we spend on vaccines every year? It's got to be, you have to be looking at a huge industry that you're,
right,
you're tilting your lance at there.
Well, you know, it's not a question of being anti-vaccine or all or nothing. I mean, if you go back 20 or 25 years to the vaccine schedule that was in place then, you know, which was basically measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, mm-hmm, that sort of thing, we basically had epidemics and polio, of course. We had epidemics under control, and we had a low rate of autism. Since then, we've added a lot of new vaccines very early in life, and a lot of them had mercury for a long time, and the flu shots still do. And we've seen the autism rate go up. It's possible that we're overdoing a good thing. I mean, believe me, my commitment is not to stopping vaccination or bringing back polio. I'm interested in autism. I also think it's important to prevent serious infectious diseases, and I'm no expert on that. But I'm just wonder if, you know, we really need a Hep B shot at the day of birth, and we need, you know, shots with three or four live viruses in them at once, given, you know, in the first year of life, and that sort of thing. I think that's a reasonable debate.
And it certainly is,
yeah,
in my book. I mean, everything should be debated, and
yeah,
this is one of them, and that's what we're doing. We're debating it today. I guess we're debating it by ourselves, though, because nobody's calling in defending
okay,
vaccinations, but that is the question. What causes autism? Is it genetic, or is it environmental, or is it a combination of both? Are we doing something, or consuming something, eating something, taking something that is fouling up our genetic code and afflicting us with autism in such incredible proportions? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, UPI journalist Dan Olmsted visited the Amish community in search of autistic children. While among the Amish, he discovered a very interesting anomaly. Whereas the rate of autism in the general population is one child in 166, the rate among the Amish appeared to be 1 in 15,000. And today, 5-6 years later, the rate of autism is said to be, here in the general population, 1 in 58. What on earth is going on in our world? Why are we so afflicted with autism? Why are the Amish not so afflicted? What is the difference between the Amish and you and I that's causing this incredible disparity? Dan Olmsted, journalist and crusader for looking into autism. So why is it so unreasonable that we would conduct an in-depth study of the Amish and have a look at what you're saying? I mean, it seems reasonable to me.
Well, I agree with you, Michael. I mean, I think that a number of ideas have been put forward about why we shouldn't do that. It's expensive. We already know the answer, in the sense that it couldn't.
Oh, we already know the answer. Okay, I love those.
You hear the phrase, it's been asked and answered quite a bit, because there have been epidemiological studies that have found no connection between, for example, vaccines and autism. And then, you know, there's the claim that there just aren't enough kids to really do this sample with, and unvaccinated children, but in fact there are. And one thing I ought to mention is, it's not just the Amish where I've found this anomaly, so to speak. There's a sort of an alternative medicine practice in Chicago that has thousands of patients, and Illinois has a pretty easy to opt out of vaccination schedule, and so this practice has a lot of never vaccinated kids, I mean thousands, and no autism, and no asthma, and no childhood diabetes, and they've got the medical computerized, you know, modern records to prove it that the Amish don't have, and it's a very, you know, heterogeneous group. It's not just one genetic model. It's mm-hmm. people from all over the city of Chicago. So, you know, that makes me really wonder, to tell you the truth.
So who's standing up and saying that we shouldn't think about this?
I would say...
there's a lot of people who... But, you know, ranting and raving that you're some kind of lunatic.
Yeah, well, that's true, but no. I'd say, for example, the American Pediatric Academy, you know, the baby doctors who give the shots and who, you know, sort of feel that they have the last word on this. They think this is ridiculous and destructive and damaging. The CDC, which recommends the childhood vaccination schedule, basically says that there is no evidence of any kind of harm. The National Institutes of Health, which has, you know, got $1 billion that Congress recently appropriated in this Combating Autism Act, seems to not want to spend very much of it to look into any kind of environmental issues. They talk about genes and about, you know, behavior therapy, as opposed to what a lot of parents of kids with autism say, which is that certain kinds of changes in diets and supplementation and some other things actually make a big difference with their kids. So it's a kind of a war between parents and what they see with their own eyes and I hate to use the word bureaucrats, but I will in this case, just kind of bureaucrats who are looking at the data and the science and, you know, the grant money and different approach.
You know, as the great Deep Throat said, follow the money.
Right.
And it would appear as though you're up against some incredibly vested interests.
Well, you know,
You're up against the big money. That's right.
I mean, you know, I think ultimately this force can't be stopped in terms of demanding more evidence-based investigation and that sort of thing, because, you know, who runs this country? I mean, it's essentially families and parents and people who, you know, see what's happening and elect officials. And, you know, there's an undercurrent right now beneath this. It's almost like before the Berlin Wall fell, you know, you got the apparatchiks are in charge of everything, and nothing. There's no problem, and everything is quiet. And then all of a sudden, boom!
Boom! The ball falls down.
I think that could be coming.
Okay, let's go to the phones, folks. Questions, comments, observations about autism. 800-624-2665, 831-4792. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host, with Dan Olmsted of with the Age of Autism.com. Let's go to Thor. Thor, welcome to the Food Chain. Pleasure to have you aboard today.
Yeah, good morning. My question is regarding vaccines. Why do they even have mercury in them to start with? I would think that if that's questionable, that that's going to be causing problems like autism and other things, why don't they just have the vaccines and the flu shots and everything and don't have mercury in them?
I think it's a preservative, but I'll toss that one to somebody who should know. Dan Olmsted, why do we have mercury in these inoculations?
Well, I mean, that's...
Or why did we? I don't know if we do anymore.
Well, that's the most fundamental question to ask, and the answer is that in the beginning anyway, in the 1930s when they started doing mass vaccination for diphtheria and other diseases that were really bad, in order to get the shots out spread as far as possible, they would send out multi-dose vials. In other words, you'd stick a syringe in and, you know, pull out a dose, and then you'd do it 10 times. And when you do that, you run the risk, even though you use a different needle, you expose it to air, you run the risk of getting like a staph infection in there, and then the next kid who gets the shot dies. So it was for very good reason, but back then, you know, they didn't really test organic mercury the way you would now before you would license it. There wasn't even an FDA. And so the solution that the government came up with in 1999 when they realized that there was a lot of mercury is they kept increasing these shots was to ask them to go to single-dose vials, which is a little more expensive, but you don't need the mercury. Now, the one exception to that has been the flu shot. And, you know, now we've got the swine flu shot, and they've increasingly recommended flu vaccine for pregnant women and infants. So we're getting pregnant women who are getting shots with organic mercury now, and we're getting, you know, six-month-old babies getting a swine flu shot and a regular flu shot and that sort of thing. So we're almost back where we started, where, you know, I think personally, based on what I know about this kind of mercury, ethyl mercury, it is a horrendous mistake to be injecting that into anybody, let alone a pregnant woman or a baby.
So do the Amish get flu?
Yeah, they do. They seem to survive, by and large. I don't want to take it too lightly. For example, there was a rubella outbreak among the Amish about a decade ago, And rubella can be harmful. If a pregnant woman gets it, it can be harmful to the baby. You get congenital defects, you get blindness and deafness. And in fact, that happened because the mothers had not gotten the rubella vaccine. Now, I would advocate, I mean, it seems to me that the rubella vaccine is a good idea because we don't want children born with birth defects if we can prevent it.
So you're not necessarily an anti-vaccine guy then?
Not in the least. I would hope that no one would say that. But
okay. Thor, do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah, just kind of the you mentioned that the flu vaccine still has mercury in it. Is that because of the same kind of situation for doesn't expire or something? Or I mean, I just would think.
Well,
you know,
we'll pick that up when we get back.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Thor. We'll pick that up when we get back from the break, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Dan Olmstead and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, you know, an anomaly is a statistic that just doesn't quite fit with the rest of the statistics. So here is an anomaly to consider. Whereas in the Amish population, the rate of autism is one child in 15,000 children. The autism rate in the general population, which is you and I, is somewhere in the neighborhood the year 2004. It was one in 166. And today, it's gone down to one in 58 or so, at least for boys. So why the anomaly? Why this incredible disparity between the Amish, who have 1 in 15,000 autistic children, and us with our 1 in 58 or 60 or whatever it is? It's an incredible anomaly, and one that shakes you in your boots if you think about it. Why is that anomaly true? What are we doing that the Amish are not doing? What are the Amish doing that we are doing? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We have Dan Olmstead, who is the editor of theageofautism.com and a crusader for looking into what on earth is going on. Why is this disparity? Dan, we were talking a little bit about the flu shots, and Thor asked why we need the mercury in flu shots.
Right. Well, it was a bit of a loophole back in 1999 when the government urged vaccine makers to remove mercury for shots that children specifically are targeted to get, like the MMR shot, the chickenpox shot. The flu shot is recommended for all ages. I mean, as we know, people get it in nursing home because flu is very dangerous world.
Mm-hmm.
And so the flu shot was not part of that recommendation. And as it has happened over the past few years, the government has increased its recommendation for who should get the flu shot. Now it's basically any pregnant woman who's pregnant during flu season, which is basically everybody, and kids 6 months of age and up. So even though some percentage of flu shots don't contain mercury, most still do. And, you know, that's a big gaping hole in the argument that we're no longer, you know, shooting kids up with mercury, we are, and pregnant women, which is, you know, I think anybody would agree that the most vulnerable creature is the fetus, you know.
I guess you don't get more vulnerable any time in your life than when you're in the womb, right?
Well, yeah, not only that, but I think studies have shown that, unfortunately, nature tends to detoxify the body by passing it through to the fetus. There's really no protection there, and there's been studies that have looked at umbilical cords and have found just a horrifying number of toxins in there, everything from, you know, Teflon from the
wow.
from the pan in the kitchen to housing or house cleaning agents, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a toxic soup we live in, and I think the ultimate message here that autism is conveying is that we're in trouble, and it may be the canary in the coal mine that we really have gone too far, and we need to clean up our planet.
And of course, the Amish are, if anything, they're clean.
Yes, they live very. You know, they're not as isolated as I had thought. I mean, they've got generators and lights, and they, you know, go to Walmart and that sort of thing. So they're not totally off of the planet the way some people think, but they definitely eat locally, generally make a lot of their own food. They can. They use doctors. They don't object. They don't have any philosophical objections to vaccines. But, you know, they don't have insurance.
So it's pay as you go.
And so they basically tend to go to a family doctor for everything, and they go when they need to go because they're sick. And so, you know, there's less antibiotics, there's less aspirin, there's less vaccines, there's, you know, fewer pesticides. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that may be working together to be protective of them. You know, I don't know.
Good, good. Let's go to Jason. Jason, welcome to the Food Chain. You're talking with Michael Olson and Dan Olmstead. Go ahead.
Yeah, great show and very important topic. I definitely believe that vaccines are, you know, are dangerous. I mean, it doesn't take too much common sense to figure out that healthy babies are, when they're getting the MMR shot, they're healthy until they get that shot, and all of a sudden they get autism. So I don't think there's much.
Well, has there been anything to prove that? I mean, it would seem like we would be able to prove that. You know, you give a kid a measles shot and they get autism. It would seem like we should be able to prove that.
Well, that's the common age where kids get autism is around, you know, two to three years old, and that's pretty much right after they give them the MMR. But what I want to ask Dan a question, because while you were talking, I just kind of did some research. I wanted to see what he had to say about. There's a Dr. Kevin Strauss. And he works in a clinic for special children, I guess, in the Amish area. And he says that the Amish, he runs a vaccination clinic, and he says that the Amish are there, and it's very busy, and they get vaccinations. And I just want to see if he's heard of Dr. Kevin Strauss. And also, I guess Strauss worked with a guy named Dr. Holmes Morton, and they basically, I guess, are trying to disprove what Dan is saying.
Right. Okay. Good. You have some critics in Amish country, Dan.
Yes, I do. Well, we've alluded to that, and that is an interesting case where I have not been able to get those folks to talk to me, although others have. And what they say, which I think is quite interesting, what Holmes Morton and Dr. Strauss say is, yes, they've seen cases of autism, but they come with the very severe genetic problems that you and I have been talking about. In the rest of society, I think what we're talking about is kids who seem quite okay from birth and then for some reason seem to regress. I think it's interesting also that this is one area in Amish country where they do vaccinate quite aggressively, and they do see some cases of autism. I mean, maybe that's a conclusion that they're not making that I am. You know, there's plenty of people, mainstream doctors, who will tell you that the overall rate of autism in the Amish community is very low.
Okay, we're going to finish right back. Do stay tuned. Well, so many things to talk about with respect to autism and so few minutes to talk about them in, so let's fire away. Let's go quickly we have Dan Olmstead here with us, the editor of theageofautism.com, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Rory, who is a father of children.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. I heard, just briefly, we have nine kids, and we had a preemie, waited a year to get her vaccinated. She started having issues, respiratory issues, so we stopped. The last four kids, or the last three, got no vaccines. And the thing is, remember this and ask your doctor, your pediatrician, how long do the immunities last from a vaccination? And they don't confirm lifelong immunity. The best estimate I've heard is 4 years. So it's a big risk for just 4 years of coverage. But that aside, I heard an interview with Dr. Mark Geyer. Are you familiar with him, Dan?
The Geyers, yeah.
Yeah, tremendous information there. I think he's a PhD in biochemistry.
Right.
In that area, but boys, the reason, there's a physiological reason why boys get it more than girls, and it has to do with testosterone. And it's pretty complicated, but very interesting stuff, and I applaud you for continuing to shine the light on this issue, because when I was a kid, Michael, you and I were kids, how many people did we know 40 years ago that had autism?
I can't think of any of them.
I can't.
You know, I mean,
there was one kid in school that was, you know, slow learner, but he wasn't autistic. You know,
yeah, you know, I can think of some kids who were just mentally not quite there, but I can't, you know, when I've seen an autistic child, I think, wow.
Yeah,
I can't recall any of them when I was a kid.
Yeah, I personally believe it's the mercury load that kids are getting from these vaccines. So anyway, I just want to throw out Dr. Mark Geyer's name in addition to Dan's work, because if people want to educate themselves, I think you can find some more info out there with that regard.
Thank you very much, Rory. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Mel. Mel, thank you for tuning in the Food Chain.
Hi. To what level of development or what age did you follow both these groups?
Dan, what age?
Well, by definition, autism has to be diagnosable by 36 months or the third birthday. So basically,
right.
I was looking for, you know, anybody, and sometimes it's not till they're 6 or 7 or 8. But I also was looking for adults with autism in the Amish land, because if it's...
That's what I'm wondering about the development.
I couldn't find any.
So does autism come on throughout life? I mean, can adults all of a sudden... No, so it's children. It comes on when you're a child. And
it does. And then it generally, you know, does not improve greatly, although sometimes it does. But it's
other things that mimic it, like avoidance behavior, children that have been abused.
That's true. That's true. But I think, you know, we don't have that level of abuse, fortunately.
Okay, thank you, Mel, for the call. Thanks. Appreciate it. Let's go. Is there anything we can do about autism?
I think identifying it early, being very proactive in trying to help kids with both behavior therapy mm-hmm. and, you know, some of these alternative treatments that I think are quite a few of them are demonstrated to be very helpful.
Well, you know, I, for one, would love to see a scientific double-blind study between those who have taken inoculations and those who have not. And that would sure clear up a lot if we just had a good scientific study. But yes. I guess that the world is afraid of that kind of information these days, because maybe there's just a lot of money involved and nobody wants to lose their money. Dan Olmsted, editor of ageofautism.com, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you all out there for tuning in the Food Chain. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.